Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. This is episode 4 of This Week in the Hawks. My name is Graham, of course. It is January the 20th, 2017. It is absolutely gorgeous outside. It's a beautiful day where I am. Probably the first decent sunny day of the year this year, which is nice to see. Lots to talk about today. Going to be talking about All-Star selections, the 4 games the Hawks played in this week, the bits of news that came from this week as well, including Gary Neal and all that jazz. But first, I'm going to start off with something a little bit different. I have in my hand here a beautiful Cadbury's cream egg. And just to start things off randomly today, I'm going to teach you how to eat one of these. It's a little early before Easter, but you know what? I'm a sucker for cream eggs, and we're going to do this. So first of all, we unwrap it from its wrapper, and you need to look at it and kind of look at it intently, like you're appraising a very valuable jewel. You know, just get a good look at it, really look at it, examine it, know what you're coming up against. Okay, good, right, we're going to bite off the top, only the top. We're going to bite off the top bit, not too far down. All right, so that's, if you remember that. Okay. Okay. Oh, that's good. Okay, so we haven't actually dug into any of the white bit yet, as such. So make sure that's all intact, but you can see it. Make sure you can see it. And now that it is, we can see it. I want you to. We're basically going to face plant into this egg. That's basically what's happening here. So we're going to stick out our tongue a little bit. And just... Really stuffy. Absolutely gorgeous. And that's the way you eat a Cadbury's cream egg. So if you learn nothing else from today, you have learned how to eat a Cadbury's cream egg. Fantastic. Now that that's out of the way, we can get on with the show. I guess since this is topical, we'll talk about the All-Star voting, the starters and the such. So yesterday on TNT. By the way, if you're... screw you. If you look on Twitter to see these starters announced, go watch the damn show. Don't tweet it out for ruin it for other people. It's supposed to be a surprise, flip's sake. Looking at the Eastern Conference All-Star starters announced on TNT last night. In the East, we have Kyrie Irving, DeMar DeRozan, Giannis Antetokounmpo, LeBron James, and Jimmy Butler as the All-Star starters. Very quickly, I don't know how on earth Kyle Lowry missed out here. Bloody hell. It's absolutely mind-boggling that Kyle Lowry is not a starter in the All-Star game. I'm a big fan of DeMar DeRozan, and I'm glad that he's starting, but I'm not glad that he and Irving are selected ahead of Lowry. So I find that very annoying as a neutral. But hey, it doesn't really matter in the end. J.E. Skeet of the Stars put that into perspective on Twitter. Then let's go to the West very quick. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time in the West because we're an Eastern Conference team podcast here. Very quickly, the West All-Star starters are Stephen Curry, James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, and Anthony Davis. Obviously, Russell Westbrook missing out is absolutely insane, ridiculous, a farce. You know, just knock your socks out with words to describe how stupid it is that he's not starting this game. But maybe it's better for OKC fans that he's not starting this game. And that's weird to say. But is this the first time that Harden, Durant, and Westbrook have all started an All-Star game? Or did they do that a few years ago? Either way, at least Durant was on the team back then. Now, of course, these three guys are on different teams. So that must be very difficult. I would find that incredibly heartbreaking. It would literally depress me and make me toss and turn in my sleep about what could have been and what should have been, but wasn't to be. So those are the All-Star starters. Obviously, the topic, the conversation now shifts to who are going to be the reserves. And we'll just we're not going to talk about the Western reserves because we don't really we don't care here about the West reserves. We'll go with the East. I think there's a few locks. Obviously, Kyle Lowry's a lock to be an Eastern reserve. Isaiah Thomas is a lock to be an Eastern reserve. So is John Wall. And outside of that, there's a few places up for grabs, I think. I think Kevin Love will be an All-Star. I don't think he's a lock, but I think he will be an All-Star. And deservedly so. I'm happy we're having nice discussions about Kevin Love again after the shit he's taken over the last few years with the Cavs. Paul George, you imagine, will probably be an All-Star reserve, more than likely. I am dying to see that Kemba. I'm hoping that Kemba Walker is an All-Star reserve. I love that guy. He should have been an All-Star reserve last year, but it didn't work out. He should definitely be there this year. And I think Paul Millsap is also extremely deserving of an All-Star reserve spot. And I kind of wanted to talk about that a little bit, about Paul Millsap's case to be an All-Star for the fourth consecutive season. I was watching the guys on TNT make their Eastern Conference picks for the reserves. They all have as locks Isaiah Thomas, Kemba Walker. So this is Kenny, Shaq, EJ, and King Chuck. What a bloody hell. They all have Isaiah Thomas, Kemba Walker, Kevin Love, and John Wall as their picks that everyone agreed on. Shaq, EJ, and Kenny have Kyle Lowry. Chuck and Kenny have Joel Embiid. Shaq, EJ, and Chuck have Paul George. And then Chuck, EJ, Shaq have Andre Drummond, with Kenny going with Dwight Howard, which is interesting, I thought. I wouldn't have thought Dwight Howard would have cracked that list. But of course, the big thing to see here is that there's no Paul Millsap. I think it's safe to say that. I wouldn't say Kemba Walker is a lock as they have it. I hope that he makes it. But I'm scratching my head here at Joel Embiid. I just don't think he has the... He's had a great season. I've loved Joel Embiid since watching him and watching that pre-footage in the draft, pre-draft footage. I've hopped on that bandwagon since the day he was drafted and before, watching clips for him. Not just this season when he actually started playing. So I'm proud of myself for that one. But I don't think he's an All-Star this year. Maybe next year, but not this year. I don't think he's going to get that kind of respect from the coaches this year, that someone like a Paul Millsap or an Al Horford, who I think could make an All-Star team, conceivably, just because I think he does have that kind of respect around the league with the coaches. So I wouldn't be at all surprised to see him in the equation here. But I think Paul Millsap definitely is warranting of an All-Star spot. And you know, you could just say, you're only saying that because, you know, you write about the Hawks and blah, 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 blah. And while I love me some Paul Millsap, I think he's actually deserving. You look at the splits from, okay, let's just go over. So he was an All-Star lock last year. There's no debating it as such. Everyone accepted that he was an All-Star last year before it was announced that he was. And I'm thinking, what is so different this year compared to last year that made him a lock? So let's go over the numbers right quick. Just the standard splits, really. Millsap this season is averaging 17.8 points per game on 43.7% shooting, 8.1 rebounds, 3.9 assists, 1.6 steals, a block a game, 31% shooting from three, I should have mentioned that before, and a plus-minus rating of 3.1. And then last year, 17.1 points per game, 9 rebounds, 3.3 assists, 1.85 steals, 1.7 blocks, 47% shooting from the field, 31.9% from three, and a plus-minus rating of 2.7. So very even splits across the board. A few numbers are up and down, but only very slightly. And I just don't... And the Hawks, you know, it's not like they've lost 25 games. Like, they have pretty much the exact same record as they did this time last year. So why are we not having this conversation about Paul Millsap being an All-Star? Like, what's changed here? I don't understand. I think he should be in there, because this team just would completely fall apart without him, and kind of did fall apart without him when he missed those three games. I think it was early December, and then they lost by 36 against the Pistons, they lost by 44 against the Raptors, and then lost in Phoenix without Paul Millsap. So I think he is so instrumental to this team. Thankfully, Bleacher Report see the sense and as their number one front court reserve. They have Paul Millsap here in the East. They mentioned his real plus minus rating. He has a real plus minus rating of +5.59. That ranks ninth in the entire league, and that's second only behind Draymond Green in terms of bigs, like power forwards and centers. So that kind of gives you how valuable Millsap is. I think he's a definite all-star. I'm hoping, common sense should prevail here. The coaches, you know, they see the game. They've been around for a while. They know Millsap's been around for a while. They know his worth. I think he will get that recognition. I think Al Horford will also get that recognition as well, especially with the Celtics being one of the better teams in the East. I think they're still third at the moment. So I think they'll get that respect. And hopefully they'll be there. Because definitely he is very much deserving of an all-star spot. In total, he actually finished 20th in all-star voting in the front court, did Millsap. Dwight finished 13th voting in the front court. And then Dennis Schroeder finished 20th in voting in the back court. So, maybe Schroeder can make an all-star team one day, but he definitely needs a few guards to drop off and for him to really improve. I think it's definitely there for him. He could easily be one or two players that actually make an all-star team from the 2013 draft. Of course, Giannis was the first player from the 2013 draft to make an all-star team. How bad is it for that draft class that the first player to make an all-star team wasn't even selected in the lottery? You know, Giannis was 15th selected overall. And the only other player I see in the lottery that could actually make an all-star team one day is probably CJ McCollum. Maybe. The West is, you know, if Mike Conley can't even get in the all-star game. And, you know, he would have been. If he was in the Eastern Conference, Mike Conley would probably be a three-time all-star right now, easily. But because of the West, it's a log jam at the guard position with so much depth. Your Chris Pauls, your Currys, your Westbrooks, your Hardens, Lillards, etc., etc. It's just been so difficult to get in. But, you know, maybe for Schroeder in the East, he's only 23, I think. So he's got time. Maybe by the time he's 27 or 28, could break through. You know, imagine Lowry would have dropped off at that point. Maybe. So you never know. It'll be interesting to see. Other news this week. It was actually quite enough week in the news this week. No trade BS this week. Thankfully, I guess the only bit of news was that the Hawks traded Mo Williams and $650,000 cash money, it's a lot of cash, to the Denver Nuggets for basically a $2.2 million traded player exception. The thing that the Hawks obviously wanted to achieve here was, okay, the trade exception is nice, but the big thing is to open up that roster spot that was just wasting away with Mo Williams not being around. And so with that roster spot, they signed Gary Neal, the veteran guard Gary Neal, to a 10-day contract. Interesting to see how that will work out. You know, Bud has kind of said he's a combo guard, but knows that they're trying to work him towards being like that third point guard. What he will actually add, I'm not sure. It's nice to have that little insurance in case, you know, Delaney and Schroeder pick up some fouls in the first quarter and get into foul trouble. Nice to have a third guard to come off the bench and, you know, help those guys out a little bit, because the Hawks have ran with no point guard lineups before when those two have gone to foul trouble. And I'm okay with Bazemore running that point sometimes, but it's not ideal. I'm interested to see what Neal adds as a shooter. You know, he's a pretty decent outside shooter. Maybe he can help in that department. Who knows? We will see over these next 20 days, because I imagine he'll be signed to a second 10-day contract. Just to see what the, just get, extend that a little bit, see what they have. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see if how Bud slides into rotation, because I imagine he wants to see him play. Because if he's not going to play games, he's not going to see what he can add to the team. So we'll have to see what he can add to the team, if anything. We'll see. We'll have to see. Other news this week. I guess the only other bit of news was that there is a report that the Pelicans and the Hawks, you know, when the Hawks were kind of shopping everyone, talked about a Dwight Howard trade. I imagine that's not going to go ahead now. And supposedly reports saying that inside the team, that, you know, they weren't too keen on Howard coming along. It would help Anthony Davis absorb him a little bit, because Omer Asik was supposed to do that job, but Omer Asik is not very good and not very mobile, and he's still on the bench, not playing games, earning like $11 million a year for the next at least 2 seasons after this one. So congratulations. Could even be 3 seasons, because he signed that 5-year deal in 2015. I think the last year is not guaranteed, but good Lord, that was a horrible contract then, and it's even worse now. So just to have that body for AD to, you know, help AD not bang low with these guys the whole time. But it doesn't seem that that would be the case now. The Hawks have kind of yanked Millsap from the trading block, and, you know, seeing what they have going forward into the playoffs, where it looks like they could have home court advantage, whether it's a 3 or 4 seed. Still a long way to go, of course, but yeah. It would have been interesting to see what would have come back to the Hawks if Dwight Howard was traded. I imagine maybe Terrence Jones. I'd be amazed if Buddy Hield was included, but I wouldn't be surprised at the same time. You know, he's not been great. So that was interesting anyways. That's kind of it for the news. Again, it was a quiet week in the news for the Hawks, but not a quiet week in terms of games. Since we were here last Friday, the Hawks have played 4 games. Played against the Celtics on Friday night there, the Bucks on Sunday, the Knicks on Monday, and then the Pistons on Wednesday. That's what it was Wednesday. Let's quickly throw it back to that Celtics game on Friday. I don't want to spend too much time here because it was a while ago at this stage. But obviously, the big one here, Al Horford's return to Atlanta. He was booed in the intros and did get a nice video tribute. And the Hawks, even though they started booing at the start, gave him the standing O at the end. Thankfully, like, it's stupid that Horford's booed in the first place in the intros. You know, once the game starts, that's different. You know, he's a member of the other team. He wears green, not blue and green on this night, as it turned out. So I understand that. But in the intros, and yeah, I didn't like it. I think he was even a bit surprised. Should he have been? Yeah, probably, actually. I know, in a certain way, you kind of bring it on yourself when you leave like that to join Boston. And obviously, the people don't really understand the whole thing going on behind this situation, you know, with the Hawks, you know, not really meeting his valuation, and the such, and, you know, with the whole nature of his free agency, you know, signing Dwight Howard first rather than focus on your best free agent first, you know, all these things. People, I don't think people really, the average fan wouldn't have got that and just saw him as just leaving for the Celtics. It wasn't quite like that. But eventually, you know, the game was played. The Celtics just destroyed the Hawks in the first quarter from behind the arc, 8 of 11 from 3 in the first quarter. Built up a 20-point lead by the third quarter. Hawks kind of cut into it to 16 in the fourth. That was the largest lead the Celtics had in the fourth quarter, was 16 points. Hawks came all the way back, some insane, pretty much riding the bench, really, with Mike Dunleavy, who played his first game here. Malcolm Delaney was unreal in this game. Some of the shots he made in this game were unbelievable. There was no right for some of those to go in, but they did. Hawks eventually tied the game with a Millsap three to tie up at 101 apiece, with, I think it was about 20-something seconds left. Only, of course, for Isaiah Thomas to come right down the other end without taking a timeout, which I actually like. I like when you can make a play like that without making a stoppage. I think that's just so much skill involved in that. And hits the jumper with the step back with about 2-point-something seconds left over Bazemore. You know, you can't be mad at that. It was a really nice shot over the longer Bazemore. You know, he created the space himself. You know, you just have to live with that. The Hawks were unable to come up with anything on the other end, and they lost this game 103-101. That was a tough loss, because I think of all the games, you know, I think they really wanted this one. But you know, Dennis Schroeder and Isaiah Thomas and, you know, Al Horford coming back, you know, the Celtics coming back, first meeting of the season. I think they really wanted it, but it just got away from them. It was just too much to do in the end. Couldn't get that last stop. But hey, You can't fault the effort here. A couple of key things from this game, and Dennis Schroeder really struggled against Isaiah. Well, not against Isaiah. He just struggled in general. 4 points, 2 of 11 shooting in 22 minutes. He did not play in the fourth quarter. Probably one of his worst games of the season in terms of impact. He's had worse games where he's just been boneheaded and makes stupid plays and made stupid decisions, but just couldn't really make an impact here. The bench, as I mentioned, was great. Malcolm Delaney, 17 points. Tim Hardaway Jr., who kind of really got going in the fourth quarter, he scored 23 points. And we mentioned Mike Dunleavy, made his first Atlanta appearance in a really weird circumstance. He wasn't part of the rotation, like the first half rotation. And only he came on at the end, near the end of the third quarter when the Hawks were down by 20 points. And then played the whole fourth quarter, made some big shots. The big one to keep them, I think, to bring it in within 3 or 2 in the fourth. Ultimately couldn't see the Hawks over the top, but hey, decent debut for Dunleavy. He moved around quite well. Bloody hell, I can't talk today. Speak English, speak slower. Tough loss here, but obviously it snapped the 7-game winning streak. But hey, can't win them all. These two teams will meet again, and we'll meet at Phillips Arena again in March. So look forward to those, because that Boston game in Boston, it's going to be good. I hope Dennis Schroeder is ready, because he's going to be booed. And that Celtic crowd is loud. That was one thing I noticed from the playoffs last year. The noise level, like from the Celtics series compared to the Cavs series, no comparison. The Celtics were way louder. That's a way more intimidating place to go play, I think, than Cleveland. Even though you're against LeBron, just the environment is so much more hostile. So Dennis can look forward to that when they pop into the Garden in February? Must be February. Sunday then saw the Hawks take on the Bucks, looking to bounce back from that tough loss on Friday. Did a good job doing that. The bench was pretty decent in this game. The big thing from this game was Mike Dunleavy just exploded. Season high 20 points of 6 of 10 shooting, 4 of 5 from behind the arc, and 23 minutes. Dunleavy was great in this game. The shot was going down. The Bucks kind of came out and unsettled the Hawks. They were just more, they had just, their activity was greater than the Hawks was in the first few minutes. The Hawks have got worse, kind of sluggish to start this game. Maybe they're tired, but you got to come out and play. And the Bucks just played much better, and Bud was not too happy about it. They hit a lot of shots in the first quarter, the Bucks, but the Hawks did come back. They eventually tied the first quarter at 36 apiece. And just kind of won all the rest of the quarters from there. No, I'm lying. They lost the third quarter 30-28. But they played much better for the rest of the game. The second quarter was key there. Outscoring the Bucks 24-17, just getting those stops, getting going. Kent Bazemore in this game was fantastic. Really took over in the third quarter there. I think he scored 13 of his 24 points in that period. 8 of 13 shooting for Baze, 4 of 7 from behind the arc, 4 of 5 from the free throw line. Just a really good game for Baze. He's really struggled this season, so it was really good to see him have a good game for once, because you just feel good for the guy. It's been hard to watch him, because he's so hard on himself, and you can just kind of see when in the body language that when he's having a bad game, it's just tough for him. So it's just good to see him rolling like that, as he did in this game. You can't be not happy for Baze in this situation. Kind of another rough game for Dennis Schroeder. The second one in the row, he didn't play in the fourth quarter. 6 points and 3 of 8 shooting. Again, just couldn't really make that impact. Maybe it was just a little funk from Celtics game hangover. I'm not bothering to talk about the whole Isaiah Thomas thing. Post-game, just can't be arsed. It's not even news. It's not even news. And we were talking about the thing off the court that is the main thing from that game, rather than between those two, rather than on it. And I don't like that, so I'm not going to give it the attention it doesn't deserve. It doesn't deserve any attention. Delaney came in, though, and did a nice job. 9 points, 9 assists in 26 minutes. Good to see Malcolm have some good games here. He's been playing really well of late off that bench, kind of like he was at the beginning of the season. Maybe he's got over that little rookie wall. That rookie wall. So it's good to see Delaney have a good game, and shooting the ball pretty well too, especially from behind the arc, where he's been much better of late. So good on you, Malcolm. The unfortunate thing from this game, of course, was Mike Muscala had a nasty roll of the ankle there in the first quarter. He only played, I think it was 43 seconds, I have it down here. Stepping on the ankle of, or the foot of Dennis Schroeder, it seemed, and rolled his ankle. Almost straight away was ruled that it was announced that he wouldn't be returning, which was the big worry for me. Even though he seemed to get up okay, did start limping quite a bit then after that. And yeah, straight away, will not return. And then immediately kind of after the game, you know, Bud kind of said that, you know, he wouldn't be traveling to New York. Just 24, you know, just give 24 hours, see how that ankle is, and he didn't come out to New York. And yeah, not a whole lot else to say about that game. The Hawks won. Why don't I mention that from the start? Mention the score first and then talk about the game. The Hawks won 111-98. Seemed a little bit much in the end, but you know what? You take it. Giannis Antetokounmpo went off with like 33, but kind of no one else played well. Jabari Parker did not play well in this game, unfortunately. Because I'm a big fan of Jabari Parker. I prefer him much more so than Andrew Wiggins. And I think Jabari has a great chance to be an all-star next season if he continues his development as he has this season. But hey, that's for next year. For now, the Bucks don't have a whole lot of help. Again, missing Chris Middleton as they have done the whole season isn't ideal, but they're managing just fine without them, without him, them. And I expect them to make the playoffs this season, and I'm interested to see where they'll settle. I think they'll settle around the 6th or 7th seed, maybe even the 5th. Gosh, that would be interesting. Could you imagine the Hawks-Bucks series? I just think Atlanta will have that coach there as such. Bud will just coach Jason Kidd there. Oh yeah, one other thing from that game. It was Martin Luther King's birthday on that Sunday. And the Hawks, you know, had brought out that choir and took us all to church. And gosh, that is the best player intro ever in the league. I don't care. You can't beat that. It's so fantastic. There's no real Hawk that has like the syllables to make this really work. Like Al Horford was really good last year with that, you know, it's because it's three syllables for his whole name. Like Al, well, I remember it's four. Al Horford. Yeah, three syllables. So it's like Al Horford. So didn't have that this year, but I loved how they with Dwight in the had like real low. Like Dwight Howard, and I can't sing the low one, but I thought that was a nice touch at least. It's so good, and yeah, absolutely fantastic. Go check it out if you haven't heard it. It's just fantastic. On to the third game of the week, Monday, MLK Day. No Hawks game in Atlanta or Memphis for that matter, which is a little weird. But hey. At least the Hawks got a game on MLK Day. They went out to New York for the second afternoon game in a row. They played at 3 p.m. Eastern on the Sunday, then 1 p.m. Eastern on the Monday. No Mike Muscala, obviously. Dwight Howard scratched off late for rest, but kind of made up because, you know, the Knicks are also missing Kristaps Porzingis. Really close game this throughout the whole way. No team led by more than, I think it was 8, 20 lead changes, 14 game ties. And eventually it came down to two things, really. First of all, Dennis Schroeder hits a big three-pointer to put the Hawks up 108-107, the end score of this game, of course. So that was a game-winning three. I thought one three-pointer that was equally important before that was Tim Hardaway Jr.'s three-pointer. I think the Knicks were up 103-98 in the fourth. And it's always in that range where if they go on a little 5-0 run, suddenly you're looking down at the barrel of a 10-point deficit in the fourth with a few minutes left, and it's like, ah, there goes that game. But Timmy hits the big three to bring the Hawks within 2 to 101-103. I think it was that score anyways. But I thought that three was as important as Dennis's three here. And of course, Dennis's three would have been no good if the Knicks had just gone up and scored on the final possession. Mad sequence, Cephalosha and I think it was Bazemore in that pick and roll kind of showed Derrick Rose a really nice open lane for him to drive in. And so Rose took it Millsap saw it coming, came over, blocked the shot. Rebound falls to Melo. How on earth did he not put this away? I have no idea, but Melo misses an absolute freebie. Hawk get the rebound and scramble away with the win. Somehow, without Dwight Howard. People were saying that would have been a horrible loss on Twitter. I disagree, because first of all, it's the second day of a back-to-back in the day. You're on the road. You've no Dwight Howard, no Mike Muscala. Would that have been such a horrible loss? I don't think so, but the Hawks got the win anyways, despite an ugly rebounding differential, losing 53-36 on the boards. The Knicks' turnovers really hurt them here. 18 turnovers for the Knicks, 24 points the Hawks scored off of that. And Chris Humphreys, good old Chris Humphreys, three-point master. 3 of 5 shooting for Humphreys. Poor Knicks fans, you know, you can never see that coming. And unfortunately, that ultimately undid the Knicks. 14 points for Humphreys in this game. Also 5 of 8 from the free throw line, which I thought was interesting, getting to that line. Dennis Schroeder had a really, you know, that was a really quiet 28 points for Dennis Schroeder. Obviously, he hit the game-winning 3, but, you know, he shot 13 of 16 from the field. And it's only when I looked at that afterwards, after the game, it's like, holy crap, he had a very quiet, good game. So that was good to see. Tim Hardaway Jr., who actually started this game in place of the Hawks went small here and stuck Millsap at center and stuck THJ in the backcourt with Dennis Schroeder, got going in the fourth quarter. You know, he's obviously motivated against his former team to have a good game here. And he did, 20 points, 9 of 16 shooting. Again, getting to the rim a lot, which I really liked. You know, he saw that the three ball wasn't really going down. He shot 2-7 from there. It's getting to the rim a little bit more, which I like. It's always good. And it's good to see Timmy have a good game against the Knicks. Just because, you know, you always want to have a good game against a team that traded you. But I just think that that second season with the Knicks, he really struggled. And I think the crowd kind of got onto him a little bit. And, you know, it's New York. That happens. You got to be strong mentally play in New York, but you know, it's just good to see Tim have a good game in that sense. All the Mike Dunleavy hype from the last two games kind of really fell back down to earth here. Dunleavy was scoreless in 19 minutes of play, 0 points, 0-5 from the field, 0-2 from behind the arc. Just your classic calm yourself down here game. It's like, you know what, he shot 6 of his first 8 3-pointers. And yeah, just a reminder for everyone that, you know, Mike Dunleavy is Mike Dunleavy. He's not gonna scorch you for 20 points every single night. He will contribute, but he will not light you up every night. So just a nice good for the fans to be kind of brought back down to earth here with Mike Dunleavy here. With the shortage of bigs, Mike Scott actually got to see some game time here, and unfortunately Scott did not look very good. Eventually got one of his 3-pointers to fall, but only shot 1 of 5 from the field. Just didn't look great, and that hurts me to say because I love Mike Scott. He's the greatest forward in Atlanta Hawks history, of course. So I always want him to do well, but he just hasn't looked great. And you know, there's a real chance for him to, you know, earn some few more minutes here, just to show people that he's still have got it. But obviously his preparations for the season were completely destroyed with injuries and the such, so it's unfortunate to see Mike Scott struggle like this. I kind of worry about him going forward with the emergence of Mike Muscala. I mean, I think the Hawks lead the league in Mike's on this team. You've got Mike Scott, Mike Dunleavy. Crap, there's more. There could have to be more than, yeah, Mike Muscala, there's another one. And if you go by Twitter, you got Dennis Mike. So, yay for Mike's in the Hawks. Hopefully, Mike Scott can do a little better. But yeah, it didn't look great in this game, unfortunately, which sucks to say. And finally, Wednesday's game against the Pistons at the Palace. The Hawks' last visit at the Palace this season and the last meeting with Detroit this season, unless they meet in the playoffs. A bit of a massacre here. Pistons won 118-95. The Pistons just absolutely destroying the Hawks in the first quarter. Good Lord. Outscoring the Hawks 42-18. 42 points to 18. And then wasn't that the Hawks shot badly? I think they shot over 40% for the quarter, but just the Pistons shot over 60%. I think they've made like 6 of 7 from behind the arc. Their defense was really good, really limited the Hawks. And, you know, and they were tired. I think the Hawks were quite tired. It's their third game in 4 nights. They've been on the road for a little bit here. A little bit. They've been on the road for 2 games. But they just looked sluggish. The Pistons exploited that. They were able to get to the paint with ease. The Hawks found it very difficult to get to the paint. You know, I kind of covered this in my write-up that the Pistons' defense was really good. The way they were moving their feet and switching, it just really cut off the Hawks from driving into the lane. Admittedly, the Hawks' ball movement and man movement didn't help in that aspect, but I still think you got to give the credit to the Pistons. They were much the better team in this game. And even though the Hawks actually won, yeah, the Hawks actually won this game. If you don't count the first quarter, they outscored the Pistons. I think it was 77-76 for the 3 quarters. But unfortunately, basketball dictates that you must play 4 quarters, and then the first quarter counts. So unfortunately, the Hawks lost this by 23 points. But hey, you have these games. Paul Millsap, Bud was so desperate in that first quarter that he sent Paul Millsap back out into the lineup with 2 fouls. That's how desperate Bud was to try and get something going here. Millsap was one of the only good players from this game. 21 points, 7-17 shooting in 27 minutes. You know, Millsap was good. No one else was really good. Tim Hardaway Jr. was okay for the first little bit. But yeah, no one else was really good. Dwight Howard, 4 points, 1 shot. He has 1 shot. He was destroyed in the matchup with Andre Drummond. Drummond finishing with 13 points and 17 rebounds. Dwight finishing with 4 points and 3 rebounds. Oh my goodness. I mean, I know Dwight has his limitations on offense, and I'm not a huge fan of Dwight Howard's game. But you have to find him. You have to find more ways to get him involved. Because if you get him involved in offense, he's going to be a little bit more involved in defense. You know, he needs to feel involved. And I just don't think that's... Run a few more things for him. The one shot he did have, though, was really nice. A real nice... probably the nicest post move I've seen from Dwight this season. That little hook. Little shot there. But yeah, just get him involved more. One shot is absolutely ridiculous. So yeah, come on, Mike Budenholzer. Get him involved a little more. Earlier that day, it was announced that Gary Neal was signed to a 10-day contract. And Bud said that Neal wouldn't play, even though he was active, because Mike Muscala missed his second straight game here with that ankle injury. Didn't travel to Detroit. But he said that Neal wouldn't play unless there were unusual circumstances. And I would say being like 27 points down in the third quarter with a few minutes left to go until the fourth is an unusual situation for the Hawks. So he came in, played the end of the third quarter and the fourth quarter, the entire fourth quarter, as did a lot of the bench. And Mike Budenholzer early waving that white flag, just getting his guys some rest. Which I think is good because, you know, there wasn't really any comeback on here. So just good to get a rest. Good to get extended minutes for Bembry or Prince. See what you have in Gary Neal and see what you can get from Mike Scott and see if you can get him going. Unfortunately for Scott, scoreless again. 0-for-3 shooting. 0-for-2 from the three-point line in 14 minutes. You know, that was unfortunate. They couldn't really, stand out in extended minutes there in the fourth quarter, but hey, there's always another day. Dennis Schroeder was not very good in this game. even though he scored 13 points on 5 of 11 shooting, some of his decision making and shot making or shot selection was something was left to be desired, shall we say. It kind of stems back to nearly no one having a great game here. The rebounding. How can I forget this? The Pistons out-rebounded the Hawks. Are you ready for this? Because I don't think you're ready for this. 60-32 was the rebounding margin for the Hawks and Pistons here. Pistons almost doubled the amount of rebounds the Hawks made, which is absolutely unbelievable with Dwight Howard in the lineup that was allowed to happen. There was a point in this game where the Pistons had more offensive rebounds than the Hawks had total rebounds, which is not good. So yeah, just a real game to forget here. Thankfully, didn't really lose a whole lot of ground here in the standings. The Celtics lost to the Knicks that night, and the Raptors, you know, because the Hawks are really pushing for that 2 seed, you know. They lost to the Sixers. Congratulations, Sixers. 6-2 in January. What the hell is going on? I think they're 13th in the East, not at the bottom. This is very strange, but hey, congratulations to them. Yeah, not a good game here, but you know what? It didn't really lose a whole lot here. The Hawks do have to be a little bit wary of the Wizards coming behind them, suddenly making a push for their position, both in the playoffs and, of course, in the division. The Wizards have actually found something that works. I think I heard somewhere they're 16-6 over this last whole stretch. I'm not 100% sure on that. Of course, they won last night in MSG, so it's probably a little bit higher now. But hey, they're playing very well, and the Hawks need to kind of keep up their winning stretch, because the Hawks, you know, they've been playing great over these last 12, 15 games as well. So they just need to keep at it, and be interesting to see if the Wizards can mount a challenge for the Hawks in the Southeast Division. Because it seems like these are the two teams that's coming down between now. I know the Hornets are... Hornets Southeast? I think so, yeah. The Hornets are Southeast. I should know that, shouldn't I? Oh, well. Just to go over a few stats then for the week. Hawks played 4 games, of course, from last Friday. 2-2 record. All these stats I'm about to list are averages over the last 4 games. 103.8 points on 45.1% shooting from the field, 28% from three, 77.8 from the free throw line, 37 rebounds, 24.8 assists, 13.5 turnovers, not too shabby at all, 6.5 steals, 4 blocks per game, an offensive rating of 108.2, a defensive rating of 111.6, a net rating of -3.4. I think that Pistons game has obviously a lot to do with that, with the massive differential, with obviously losing by 23 and conceding 118 points on that night. So, you know, look into that what you may. Look at the players who were in form this week over these last 4 games. Paul Millsap, 19.8 points per game on 43.5% shooting from the field, 33.3% from the three-point line, 7 rebounds, 5.3 assists, 1 steal, and 1.5 blocks. You know, standard Paul Millsap stuff. Again, if he's not an all-star, I'm going to be very upset. The other player who had a good week was Kent Bazemore, 15.5 points per game on 44.7% shooting from the field and 37.5% shooting from three. Good week for Bazemore, just stringing together some good performances here. Didn't mention him much against the Knicks there. He, you know, scored 10 points against the Pistons, but, you know, none of them played well. Did have a decent game against the Knicks, scored 16 points. Three-pointer wasn't really falling, shot 2 of 8 in that game, but hey, good week for Baze. Hopefully he can build on this and kind of return to the Baze that we know and love from last year. Okay, the players out of form this week. Dennis Schroeder to an extent. He's scoring 12.8 points on 50% shooting from the field, but 14.3% shooting from behind the arc. You know, he's been averaging 40 or so this season, or like 37. 4.5 assists in 26.9 minutes a game. Minutes have come down a little bit, you know, not playing in those 2-4 quarters against the Celtics and the Bucks, and 2.5 turnovers. And the big thing here, -13.3 in plus-minus rating. Oh my goodness. That is the worst by far on the team this week. And yeah, good Lord, I didn't think it was that bad. But yeah, Dennis's defense has not been too hot of late. He's definitely regressed in that area, as he's taken on a lot more of the not the offensive load, but just focusing more in that area to just get some points and the such. His defense has definitely dropped off. The other player struggling this week is Thabo Sefolosha, averaging 4 points per game on 23.8% shooting from the field, 25% from behind the arc in 23 minutes per game. And he's second in this week in minus rating, -9 in the plus minus there for Thabo Sefolosha. Not very good week for Thabo. Scoring has been an issue throughout the season for Thabo, and that Pistons game is kind of reflective of that. 0 of 3 in 12 minutes. I don't believe he's injured at the moment, but hey, that's unfortunate. No, Thabo, the Hawks could really use his production. Even 8 or 10 points, that would be huge, but it's just not, didn't it just didn't happen last week, I'm afraid. Okie doke, that just about does it for this week. Let's just go over the games that the Hawks are playing next from Monday to Friday to Friday. They play the Bulls at Phillips Arena tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 1 o'clock over here. Whether I get to watch that live or not is I'm unsure. But against the Bulls there tonight, part of a rare back, a rare home back to back, because the Hawks are in action again on Saturday at home against the Sixers. This normally would be an easy win, but the Sixers are playing very well of late, 6-2 in January, like I mentioned. And but there's a chance that Joel Embiid might not play, just the way that his the way they're managing him at the moment, the Sixers. So we'll see, but definitely not a matchup to be laughing at. And the one maybe you could laugh at maybe is the Clippers. Oh, they're home again, the Hawks here. Yeah, that's good. They play the Clippers on Monday, 23rd of January. Chris Paul has just been ruled out for 6 to 8 weeks with a thumb injury. So, and I think Blake Griffin is already out as well. So the Hawks just need to worry about JJ Redick really and DeAndre Jordan, and they should pull through. But of course, they should have done a lot of things this season, the Hawks, and they haven't. So no easy wins in this league. But you know you fancy their chances here against the Clippers. Then on Wednesday night, the Hawks are in action again against the Bulls at United Center, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. The second matchup with the Bulls in the matter of days, the third overall in this series. I'm not sure how many times these two teams play each other this year, but hey, and then the Hawks are back at it again on Friday. Of course, we'll have another podcast before then, but then that Friday game is against the Wizards at Phillips Arena. And that might not have been a very big game at the end of November, but it's a big, much bigger game now that the Wizards have become a competent basketball team again. So, hey, but we'll be chatting before that. That is going to do it for this week. No breaking news coming through that I can see. The only thing worth mentioning tonight that is Mike Muscala is going to miss a third game in a row with that ankle injury, which is going to get a little bit worrying. But hey, we shall see. So yeah, thank you very much for listening. You can find us on Audio Boom and share the love, man. Share the podcast around if you like it. You know, maybe give the retweet or something. Not that I think anything I do here is fantastic, but hey, just to get the word out, and it's something a little bit different. Just maybe just get the word out a little bit. I would really appreciate that. Of course, any constructive criticism is always welcome. Of course, I realize I can talk a little bit slower, and I try to do that. I caught myself once or twice here, but I will try to be better at that. Again, hoping to have some sort of better audio soon. I know it's not completely awful now, but it's not where I would like it to be. And we're saying no to intro music because screw that. I'm not looking for that crap. If a piece of music that comes available to me that's perfect, we may roll with it, but I just couldn't be arsed to get intro music. You know why? What's the point? Why do I have to have one? Is it the unwritten rule that all podcasts must have intro music? No, screw that. We're breaking. Break, we're gonna walk away from this trend here and do something different. good Lord. All right, that's it. Thank you for listening, and have a good one.